It is draft lottery day in the NHL. Welcome to Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks, also your home of the draft lottery today, later on. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team at The Athletic. Canucks Hour brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. I'd never really realized it before, but that read is very well suited to our show, right? Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come. That's so much of what we're talking about here with the Canucks, Drancer. I don't know why that just popped into my head right now, but I'm glad we have an on-point, very fitting read off the top of the show every time.
Process-driven.
Yeah,
Avenue
exactly.
Machinery. Let's
Avenue
go.
Avenue Machinery. So shout out to Avenue Machinery.
And shout out to Process, which had a very good night in the NHL last night. 60% expected goals for the Florida Panthers, who fell behind 2-1. At the time that the Florida Panthers fell behind 2-1, it was Washington's 12th shot of the night. Florida had 24. So it was 24-12 when Florida fell behind 2-1. That's hockey sometimes. Variance goes against you. And the playoffs, and this is such an important thing to remember, the playoffs are not designed to efficiently reward the highest quality team, right? Hockey is a game where there's only, you know, somewhere between 3 to 7 goal events a game, most often, right? Over-unders are set at 5.5. 6.5. So there's not a ton of goal events. And so often, as we know, goals are a puck bounces in off the skate, right? A softie goes in from beneath the goal line. A random deflection beats a goaltender. So in tournament hockey, small sample tournament hockey, the impact of luck and variance, the impact of injuries, the impact of weird matchup things that can happen between two teams is magnified. And the advantage of true talent is minimized, relatively speaking. True talent still matters, as Colorado showed, but the playoffs and you know, winning 4 consecutive 7-game series, it's not set up to reward the best team. It's designed to reward the team that plays the tournament the best, that stays the healthiest, that is the most durable, and yes, sometimes that has the most luck. And so we have to keep this in mind, because the Stanley Cup is at the top of the pyramid, right? That's what we're in this for. That's what I know our listeners are in this for. See that cup raised on Vancouver ice by the Canucks for once, while we're all still, you know, breathing oxygen before our dirt naps, right? That's the pinnacle. Well, how do you get there, right? And there's building blocks along the way, and that sort of process. And sort of at the base of the pyramid, for me anyway, is controlling play. Fundamentally, you need to be able to control play. You need to be able to, when the game's going against you, when Jake Oettinger is on an otherworldly heater, when the Florida when the Washington Capitals 1-3-1 in the neutral zone is stymieing your 5-man game, and you can't buy a power play goal to save your life. In those circumstances, right, what can you lean on? What's your plan B when the chips are down and you're facing a 3-1 deficit? And the answer for both Calgary and Florida last night was, well, we can control 60% of scoring chances and create an environment where we're far more likely than our opponent to get the next goal. In both cases, they did. Now, again, it's small sample hockey. One or both of those teams, heavily favored, could yet lose this series.
Oh, Florida was 2 minutes away from losing that game, right?
Now, down 3-1.
They were pressing like nuts, and it felt inevitable that they were going to get the tying goal, but good teams are in that situation all the time and don't tie it up. So it was still a near thing, even though everything 100%. You're saying is right, the way they dominated the game.
But you don't level it. You can't press like that. You don't have that gear when you need it to break glass in case of emergency and just completely take over a game if you can't be that team. And on the other end, right, we saw one of the most lopsided playoff losses of my lifetime with the Pittsburgh Penguins demolishing New York. Now, we've seen a lot of blowouts in this playoffs to this point. That was a singular show of dominance from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, we actually, no matter how crooked the other scorelines have been, we haven't actually seen a team defeated the way the Penguins defeated the New York Rangers. They were completely all over them. I think I saw Money Puck had the expected goal margin at 82%. Someone noted that it was the most lopsided playoff game since 2007, right? I mean, yeah. That was a historic, stomping that the Penguins doled out on the Rangers. And they did it shooting on a Vezina nominee goaltender, the guy who's going to win the Vezina, right?
Mm-hmm.
While the other Vezina nominee was eliminated last night, right? Both behind teams that are relatively feeble, and when their goaltender doesn't save their bacon, you know, you're kind of out. Now, we talked about, I talked about earlier, sort of small sample hockey minimizes true talent. Well, Shesterkin and UC Saros are the most reliable goalies in hockey, right? Saros has now done it repeatedly as a great starter. Shesterkin, I think Shesterkin's lost like 25 games over the last 3 years across multiple leagues. He's you know, God's representative between the pipes on this planet. And yet, in small sample hockey, right, you're just as likely to get Jake Oettinger stealing the show as you are to get the best goalie in the world and Igor Shesterkin stealing the show. In fact, Shesterkin over a five-game sample can look average, while an average goaltender can heat up and steal a series. Jonathan Quick against the Edmonton Oilers, anyway, in the games that the Kings have won, as an example. So, if you don't have the ability to control games, which neither the Rangers nor the Nashville Predators did, despite being 98 and 110 point teams respectively, right? We all sort of knew going in that those teams were a little bit more feeble, a little bit less structurally sound than some of their opponents. And that's shown, right? The Nashville Predators have a goalie injury and get run off the ice. The New York Rangers don't get godlike performance from Shesterkin. And are shooting on a third-string goalie.
The other team has goalie problems, and they can't take advantage of it.
But there you go. What's the difference between Nashville and Pittsburgh, other than the fact that, you know, Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup in 2016 on Nashville's ice? I mean, one team controls play, one team doesn't. That's it. Like, one team's an average puck possession team in the Nashville Predators, and one team's a dominant one. Well, there you go. One team can sustain injuries to their goaltender. One team has a plan B, and by the way, that plan B looks marvelous. And one team doesn't. And so how does this link back to the Canucks? Well, we've been talking all season about the need for this team to up their hockey IQ on the back end, up the speed and the quality of their transition game, to control play, to be a better, deeper two-way team. And this is why, right? What are the playoff teams that the Canucks most closely resemble, right? It's the New York Rangers. And it's the Nashville Predators. And not by a little bit, right? Like, those are by far the teams most comparable to the Vancouver Canucks in quality, with the exception that those teams made the playoffs and didn't have a cataclysmic first 23 games the way Vancouver did. If you look at those teams and how they performed, they're 1-7 in the playoffs. Like, that's what Vancouver was likely in for if they'd snuck in. And what's the value in that? Like, what's the value in that? They're having the same conversations in Nashville today, yeah, albeit with a little bit less intensity than we do it, about their team, even though they snuck in.
I thought it was really interesting, and I want to talk about the Pittsburgh-New York series as well, but as you mentioned, the fallout that's happening in Nashville, and obviously very different context because, you know, Nashville, as passionate as those fans are, not a traditional Canadian hockey market like Vancouver. But your colleague at The Athletic, Adam Vingan, I thought, had a really good piece last night, and or I might have read it this morning, about the fallout from the Nashville Predators getting swept by Colorado. And we tend to think in the NHL of the, okay, you can divide teams into two groups, the playoff teams and the non-playoff teams. But if you go and read that postmortem from your colleague about where Nashville stands, it's a lot of very, very familiar talking points. Talking points that would be very familiar to anyone who's been following the Canucks recently. The question of how do you make the jump from the kind of mushy middle to the legitimate contenders like the one the Predators just faced in Colorado. And one of the things I found particularly striking is, you know, Nashville has a Vezina nominee this year in UC Saros. Now, he didn't play in that series, and obviously that affects things, but still, they have that kind of piece in place. They have a Norris nominee in Roman Josi, right, who's led the NHL in scoring, had a phenomenal, historic offensive season from the blue line. They have those types of pieces, and they're still wondering, okay, how do we close this enormous gap that has opened up between us and the true contending teams? And for me, one, what that really does is just emphasize the importance of, you need those high-end pieces in place. You absolutely need them, but you have to be so sharp building out the rest of your roster around them as well, or else you end up like the Nashville Predators.
With bloated contracts. And that's the thing, like, what the Nashville Predators got out of Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson is a useful reminder, because we also saw it with Oliver Ekman-Larsson this year, right? Where you can look at those players and say, well, they're on the wrong side of 30, their powers are declining, and those contracts will hurt the team, right? You can say that. But Matt Duchene's still a really good player. Mm-hmm. Ryan Johansson is still a 6'4" center who's got a right-handed shot and can rip it and contribute on both the power play and on the penalty kill and actually drive play a little bit still at his age. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is still a classy stud top four defenseman, right? If the Canucks sign JT Miller to the type of contract that it'll take to extend him, JT Miller is still going to be one of the most versatile, fascinating, you know, swashbuckling forwards that you can find in the league. But if you have those guys taking up, you know, 14, 15 million combined in Nashville's case, or what Vancouver would get into if they did Miller and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and, you know, we'll probably destroy those contracts. We'll probably say, hey, look, you can't win like that. That's going to hold you back. But that doesn't mean that the player is not going to have stellar moments or a stellar season. It doesn't even mean that we don't rate the player. It just means that you have to be so careful in the hard cap era of committing money inefficiently, because it holds you back. And we're seeing the same in Dallas with Ben and Sagan. You know, look at all the teams that aren't contending this year, and you'll find a couple examples like this. Look at the teams that are, and you won't. And with a couple of exceptions, Bobrovsky in Florida, but that's a tough contract for them to stomach, right? John Tavares in Toronto, you're seeing it right in front of you.
That could be a major problem.
They don't have the answer. They don't have an answer to Hedman, Cernak, you know, shutting down Auston Matthews. Now, they do have an answer. It's, hey, Auston Matthews, you're the best player in the world right now. You have to go beat those guys. We can't protect you. We're not protecting a 25-year-old likely heart winner. You know, like, you got to win that matchup, man. But the point remains, like, the JT thing, if the Leafs lose this series so far, based on what we've seen of the first four games, Tavares's performance is going to be line item one or two, you know, on the discussion points, right? Right behind the club's, you know, lack of killer instinct. It's going to be John Tavares and what's next. So you have to be careful with these deals. And that's not to say that those guys aren't good players. They are. They can help you win. But at a certain point, at a certain contractual commitment with a certain amount of term attached to them, they become significant net negatives. And that's a huge thing to be aware of for this Canucks team, in addition to the need to become the type of team that can control play, which thankfully anyway, management seems to have diagnosed and hit the nail right on the head, I think, particularly with how this playoffs has played out to this point. So that's the good news. But you still have to be careful too about boxing yourself in to a point where it's even harder to build that type of team. Because the Canucks are going to have a very difficult time building that type of team, considering the commitments they already have on their books.
And the example of Nashville, it really just emphasizes to me the importance of ambition. And I know it's not that there's anything wrong. Like, it's not bad. It doesn't set them back to make the playoffs, I don't think, and get swept. It's a bummer. It's a drag. It's not a fun way to end your season. But, you know, we always hear fans say, oh, I'd rather just finish a little lower and have better lottery odds. And look, I mean, the difference between where the Canucks are likely going to draft and where Nashville is likely going to draft is not that significant. So look, hey, from an owner's perspective, you get those two home playoff dates, you get some extra revenue, that's great. But for me, it's more about what your goal is, right? It's fine to, on your build up, sneak into the playoffs and get swept by a much better team in Colorado. But that shouldn't be what you're building towards. That shouldn't be your ambition. You have to keep your eyes way farther down the road than that. And I look at Nashville, and they could have dealt Philip Forsberg for a massive haul at this year's deadline. Now, look, maybe they're still able to re-sign Philip Forsberg. They have the cap space to do it, even with those inefficient contracts on the books. But it really is just a reminder. It's not that there's anything wrong, right? It doesn't set your team back to make it to the playoffs as the eighth seed and have a bad series like that. But that you can't get caught up in the playoffs being the goal in and of themselves, because there's no real meaningful difference, or there's not any significant meaningful difference between Nashville and Vancouver.
No,
right?
Neither team won a playoff game.
Exactly. The dividing line of the playoffs is arbitrary. It does not actually mean, you know, all the teams in the playoffs are good and all the teams out of the playoffs are worse than them. That's not what it means. And you can't get caught up in thinking like that. You have to be able to accurately assess where your team is, even if you do sneak into the playoffs, and you have to be willing to make those kinds of moves. And Marcus and Gibson's text in says, there's still time for us to be in Nashville next year, squeak in and get swept. Plus, we can hold on to Miller at the deadline and watch him walk like Philip Forsberg.
Right, that would be a cataclysm.
That's the nightmare scenario.
That would be a cataclysm. So here's the other thing. Nashville didn't screw up by not selling at this deadline, in my opinion. They were so firmly ensconced in a playoff spot by that point that, you know, I'm not going to criticize them for not selling their best forward in those circumstances. I'm just not. Like, I know that from a raw asset management perspective, perhaps that's your ideal outcome, but you're still in the driver's seat with Forsberg. You can still offer him an additional year. Yeah. There's still a ton of things that you can do. Where I think Nashville deserves criticism was last year. You'll remember they got hot right before the deadline, but they were not a shoo-in and really only made the playoffs because Dallas was COVID-ravaged and just a shell of themselves throughout the year. The Predators didn't sell then, and they had like a bunch of guys like Marcus Granlund ended up re-signing in Nashville, but they'd signed him to a one-year deal right before the opening of training camp. Like, that's a free asset. You could have got a first for that. You know what I mean? Like, that was, if you go look at last offseason, that was where they threw caution to the wind and were like, yeah, let's go. Let's go make it. Didn't win a round. You know, weren't very good. Never had a chance in that Central Division first round. And that, to me, has set them on a course where, you know, this was kind of inevitable, where they're kind of stuck in this cycle of mediocrity that's going to be really, really hard to remove themselves from. They're one of the West's sick old men. Like, they're in a very, very tough spot. And to be in that tough a spot with a goalie as good as Saros and a defenseman as good as Roman Josi, you know, not to mention a winger as good as Philip Forsberg, ridiculous, right? You do need that roster. If that team was the Vancouver Canucks, I'd be saying you need to take a step back, right? Like, take a step back, move some bad money, take some bad money to move that bad money if you have to. You know, you need to reset the books here because you're not going to win. I mean, that would be a clear point of analysis for that team, too. And I think that's the team that most resembles Vancouver. Like, same with New York. And I just think you've seen it now, right? You've seen it this week. Now, maybe New York, maybe Shesterkin gets hot, right? And makes this interesting yet. That series isn't over. But I think you've seen proof positive, right? The fact is that the way this Canucks team is constructed, the way they won games down the stretch, it does not translate against teams that are able to step on the necks of their opponents and just completely take over games when the chips are down. That's the team you need to build.
The other interesting angle on that New York-Pittsburgh series is the fact, in light of what Jim Rutherford had to say about structure last week, right? It's that it's, you know, Gerard Gallant who... happy-go-lucky, players coach, laid back, all of those things versus the Pittsburgh team that Jim Rutherford built and Patrick Alvin helped build and the coach they chose in Mike Sullivan. And it's not hard to watch those games and see the difference in structure and discipline and all of those things that Jim Rutherford is talking about between the two teams. And, you know, we were talking about Pittsburgh and the difference between them and Nashville, and somebody texted in, one team has Crosby and one team doesn't. And look, of course, Sidney Crosby is a huge part of the story.
And he's been destroying things.
He has been an absolute monster.
Eater
and
of
a pleasure
worlds.
To watch.
Yeah.
Malkin's a
you
big
love
part
to
of
see
it. Crystal Tang's a big part of it. It's not a three-man show, though, in Pittsburgh.
No.
And you look up and down the lineup. Like, John Marino and Marcus Pettersson are playing phenomenal hockey for the Pittsburgh Penguins against the New York Rangers. You know, Jake Guentzel and Brian Rust, they're not solely passengers with Sidney Crosby. Yeah, it's nice to play with Sidney Crosby, but they do their part in helping make that line work as well.
Brian Rust is potentially bound to be one of the best wingers, if not the marquee winger on the free agent market. Like, the regard for him around the business. I mean, how many times have I said, are you prepared to live in a world where Brian Rust is a $6 million player? Because that's coming. Like, that's been a refrain of mine in discussing the market, the unrestricted free agent market for months. Like, Brian Rust's incredible. Gensel's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, they're phenomenal players. They are not just, you know, riding shotgun with Sidney Crosby. They do a lot to make that line.
Do you remember
take.
The old line that Sidney Crosby was hard to play with?
Yeah.
That was a bad argument. That was a bad popular take.
Turned out to be incorrect on that one.
No
but
kidding.
You just look, again, down the lineup. Danton Heinen is having a really good series. Evan Rodriguez is having a really good series. Like, they are getting
bargain
contributions.
Guys.
Yeah. From, and then, you know, Kasperi Kapanen's in a different boat, but he's stepping up and having a really nice series. It's not just, you can't just hand wave it away and say, oh, it's Crosby and Malkin. There's a lot more going on there.
When you have good leadership off of the ice, and I'll often say, if you win in the boardroom, you win on the ice, right? If you have really good leadership off of the ice, it translates. You see it on the ice, right? It's not a coincidence that the Penguins keep finding Danton Heinen and Evan Rodriguez. It's not a coincidence that the Toronto Maple Leafs keep finding David Kampf and Michael Bunting, right? It's not a coincidence that the Tampa Bay Lightning keep plugging in guys like, you know, Colton, mm-hmm. Ross Colton, and, you know, Pierre-Edward Belmar, and they become difference makers, right? It's not. It's not a coincidence in Florida that they, you know, keep finding Declares and guys like that. Now, the Florida Panthers are an interesting example for me because I was there when that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Right?
Before that developed.
Right. And there was an elite core of young players, and you could watch them play, and you thought, you know, Sasha Barkov is a top five center in this league. Jonathan Huberdeau is the best playmaking winger in this league. Aaron Ekblad might be underrated as a franchise defenseman. This guy is an absolute stud, right? Like, I saw those guys come into their own. I saw those guys grow up in this league, and they were scintillating to watch. And year after year, while I worked for that team, we missed the playoffs. Probably my fault. After the 2019-20 season, where they were bad all year, got to play in the play-in round because everyone did, got smoked by the New York Islanders. They changed management, right? Bill Zito came in, and he had one key advantage over a Canucks team that otherwise is in a pretty similar situation, right? Like, you think about the team he inherited. There was a bad defensive contract for a former Arizona Coyote in Keith Yandle, mm-hmm. right? There was a literally a perfect analogy. There was a super inefficient contract forever that lasted forever for another defenseman, Mike Matheson. Vincent Trocheck had been traded right before new leadership came in, but there was a second line center who they dealt away and freed up some cap space. There were key decisions facing a bunch of other top six wingers, including a 30 goal scorer in Mike Hoffman and another guy who rode shotgun on their top line in Evgeny Dadonov, both guys poised to be $5 million plus players. Right. And, you know, there were huge issues on defense, and the Panthers went about filling those roles. Now, A couple key advantages the Panthers had, though. One is when they briefly changed direction following the 2015-16 season and got progressive management in that they only entrusted for about 6 months, those guys re-signed Barkov, mm-hmm. who's still on that $5.9 million contract. This is the last year of that deal. Huberdeau, second in the NHL in scoring on a contract sub $6 million, and Aaron Ekblad at $7.5 million. All those guys were locked up with enormous amounts of certainty, well below market certainty. The 122-point season that the Panthers had was fundamentally built by the structure of those deals. Well, Rutherford and company are inheriting Demko. That's the and Hughes,
and
which are close analogies. But bridging Pettersson, right? The fact that Horvat's up after next year, the fact that Besser's up now, means that the analogy doesn't quite work. There is going to be a trickier path ahead for the Canucks than there was for Bill Zito in his first 2 years in Florida because of the lack of cost certainty. All of that said, with different leadership and how it showed on the ice and the ability to find guys who can be more in Florida than they could be elsewhere. Montour is a good example. Forsling's a great example mm-hmm. for Hagee, Duclair. And there were misses. Yeah. Marcus Nuttavaara didn't work out. Vinny Hinostroza didn't work out. There have been misses. But for sure, I kind of think that Claude Giroux was a miss based on what I've seen in this series. I don't think he adds a gear to that team. But nonetheless, you know, all of a sudden with different quality leadership in charge, it translated. You saw it on the ice. You saw it in the depth players. You saw it in the team construction. You saw it in the vision and the strategic insight and the ability to slowly graft value with every move onto the franchise. And now the Panthers are one of the best teams in the league. They still might not win a round. The playoffs are really cruel, but that's a really good model, I think, for the Canucks. At this point, with Pettersson, Demko, and Hughes in tow, right, you've got three elite players at premium positions in their mid-20s. You can't tear it down. You can't tear it down with Demko in net anyway. You're never going to catch Arizona, and we'll get into draft lottery talk anyway, but it's like as tempting as it would be to tear it down for next year and go after, you know, huge Canucks fan Connor Bedard, You kind of can't, because Demko's never going to let you be bad enough.
There
to
are
get
some
into...
really bad teams. Yeah. There's some really, really bad teams in the NHL.
You're never getting into the Kursk greatest tank battle mix.
No.
When you employ Thatcher Demko, Quinn Hughes, and Elias Pettersson, not to mention JT Miller, Bo Horvat, yeah.
Like, and potentially Bruce Boudreau behind the bench.
Oh yeah, yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
How one of the highest winning percentages in NHL history.
Yeah, he's an anti-tank missile in and of himself. So you're never going to get into that mix. But I think the Panthers model is a really good one to move forward, and it rests on clearing and reallocating a ton of cap space, like a massive amount. Matheson was 5, Yandel was 7. Trocheck and Hoffman were 5. Trocheck, Hoffman, and Dadonov were all 5 or 4+, right? A massive amount. We're talking about reallocating $21 million in cap space. Canucks so far have done 1.5, mm-hmm. Hamonic to Dermott, right? There's a lot of work to do, but that's the model. And it begins with being willing to lose really good players. Because if you're watching the other Eastern Conference series, you're seeing Vincent Trocheck drive play and be an exceptionally good player, right? Mike Hoffman is still the best power play shooter in this league. We also what Evgeny Dadonov did after his, yep. aborted trade. Mike Matheson, you're seeing him in Pittsburgh. He's
playing really well.
It's not like these are bad players. In fact, to a man, they are excellent players. But you have to be willing to make tough decisions in the cap era, and especially if you're taking over a team in Vancouver's position where the way forward is fraught. It's not simple. You have to be willing to reallocate cap space, trade good players, be really creative in how you surround your best young guys with a group of supporting pieces capable of helping you play the right way with structure, controlling games, because that's what wins in the playoffs. And playoff wins, Jamie, that's what we want here.
That's what we're here for. That's what Jim Rutherford is here for, certainly. And I think that's what Patrick Alvin is here for as well. 650-650, by the way, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. Make sure you subscribe to the Canucks Hour podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a 5-star rating and review as well. We'll talk more about the draft lottery, the nightmare scenarios for Canucks fans, the dream scenarios for Canucks fans. Should the lottery be tweaked at all? All of your lottery coverage plus more into the playoff slate tonight in the NHL. That's coming up next. It's Canucks Hour, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back, Sportsnet 650, Canucks Hour here with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. 3 hours and counting away from the NHL Draft Lottery tonight,
Ooh. Which
you can hear live here on Sportsnet 650.
I hope Mystery Team wins this year.
Good chance that the Canucks portion of the lottery will be over pretty quick. Very, very good chance. By the way, Canucks Hour brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery, avenuemachinery.ca.
Born on Black Friday, which is what Tom Watt, the Vancouver Province reporter, dubbed the very first NHL draft lottery in 1970, which the Canucks lost. And for those who don't know, just a brief history lesson, if you'll allow me to digress, on the subject of the Canucks draft lottery nightmares, which have persisted for 52 years. The very first official NHL event at which the Canucks were inaugurated as a franchise was held in Montreal in a smoke-filled hotel room. And everyone remembers the wheel. Everyone remembers that the Canucks lost the Gilles Perreault lottery, mm-hmm. right? But it wasn't just that they lost the Gilles Perreault lottery, right? So that day began with a coin flip. And the coin flip was to determine two items. Waiver priority, who would have first waiver priority going into the season since neither team had a record the previous year, and which team would get to select odds or evens for the spin of the wheel. And the Canucks lost a coin flip. So that's a 50% shot, and of course they lost. Thereafter, there was a spin to determine who would select first in the expansion draft. And of course the Buffalo Sabres selected... Sorry, and it was the high numbers and the low numbers.
Okay.
Excuse me, it was not the
odds. Not evens odds.
Not evens odds. And the Buffalo Sabres selected the high numbers, and the wheel was spun for the first time. And guess what? The Canucks lost the lottery to pick first at the 1970 expansion draft. Having been lucky with his selection of the high numbers, Punch Imlach, then the Buffalo Sabres general manager, once again selected the high numbers. And on this spin of the wheel, which was televised, NHL commissioner, was it Campbell? Yes, Campbell, removed his glasses for the benefit of the television screens. And the wheel itself was poorly designed so that the number 11 appeared almost like one and then a one underneath it.
Right.
Like two ones as opposed to one one right beside each other. Very poorly designed. A terrible design. And he just removed his glasses for the photo op. So when the numbers spun around to the high numbers of 11, he announced, "The Vancouver Canucks have won the draft lottery," thinking that it was the number one. But, oh, wait, no, in fact, sorry, excuse me, the Buffalo Sabres have won the expansion. The right to select first in the 1970 NHL entry draft. So, on their very first day as a franchise, the Canucks lost not just one, but three lotteries, a trend which has persisted to this day. Now, I'm curious to hear from our listeners, the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. What would be the more Canucks-y outcome tonight? Is it to win the draft lottery and be limited to only moving ahead 10 spots? Or is it for Vegas to win the draft lottery, in which case Vancouver would still manage
to fall back?
To fall back. Yeah. The most unlikely possible situation. What would be a more Canucks-y outcome, all things considered?
So for me, I'll answer, it's no question falling back. And I understand the, you know, oh, we finally win the lottery, we only get up to fifth. I completely understand that point of view. But not only to fall back, okay, and just to break down the odds, the Canucks have a 97.9% chance of picking 50th, okay? 0.8 of moving up to fifth, 0.3 of moving up to sixth, and a 1.1% chance of falling back.
So they're picking 15th.
It would be a massive upset and a massive shock if they're not picking 15th. Not only to fall back in those circumstances when you only have a 1% chance of actually losing a spot, but for it to be Vegas, the Vegas Golden Knights, be the team jumping up potentially 10 spots, bumping you back. And not only would they jump up, right, and get to pick 6th or 7th, they would also, if they don't win the lottery, they give up their pick to Buffalo this year. So it would be a double victory for them. They keep their pick and they get to move up 10 spots.
And you know Vegas isn't in the draft lottery next year. Like, I'm sorry for anyone hoping that the Black Swan event that, you know, they got caught up in terms of all of that wash of injuries late in the year. Like, it's not replicable. I know that team's aging, but they are not going to be in the playoffs next year. I promise you that. Double negatives aside, that team's too good.
Ed says the worst case scenario, the Canucks-y outcome would be falling back. Rager says the most Canucks-y outcome will be the Kraken winning next year's lottery and taking the Vancouver boy Connor Bedard, dragging him down to Seattle. Max in the Leafs Nation says, does it matter? Either way, no matter what happens, this market is going to whine about it. Well, you might be on to something there, Max.
Sure. We're avid discussers.
That's how it goes.
As Bo Horvat's agent Pat Morris once said it, this market is filled with avid discussers. It's fun.
Yeah.
And a good line by Pat. Now, I want to give you my top three outcomes I want to see at the NHL draft lottery. I'm going to start with a homer one. I think the Canucks moving up to 5 would be massive. Like, I know it's not one. I know it's not one. But there's a couple right-handed defensemen at the top of this draft class that I think really highly of. I don't know how to pronounce his name. The Czech gentleman.
Jurecek. That's how I'm rolling with until somebody tells me it's wrong.
The other one I know, Nemec.
Yeah.
And Nemec is more my guy, like, based on what I've seen, based on what I've heard. He's more the guy I'm riding for. But, I mean, if you could get one of those guys, I think they're a year away from playing in the NHL, might be able to play next year. I think that would be a massive, massive piece for the Canucks to add to their stable. You know, number one, because it would be fun to cover, because it would get everyone talking. You know, that's the number one thing I want to see. Number two thing I want to see, Chicago win the draft lottery so badly, so badly. So the Chicago Blackhawks made a ruinous trade with the Columbus Blue Jackets last summer for Seth Jones. And as part of that trade, they agreed to give up their 2022 first round pick, lottery protected. So if they win the lottery this year, that pick will transfer to the 2023 draft class unprotected. Now, we all know Chicago's not making the playoffs next year. 100%.
They're not even trying to.
I would bet my house on it. So the Chicago Blackhawks losing the ability, and granted, you know, Slafkovský or Shane Wright, I mean, decent consolation prize, but to not be in the mix for Bedard, Michkov, Fantilli next year, I mean, it couldn't happen to a nicer franchise, and I desperately want to see it. And here's the last one for our listeners, a thing I'd like to see. I would like to see one of the Senators or the Buffalo Sabres win the draft lottery. I think those are two franchises that are like the NHL's at its best when those markets are engaged, when those markets have teams to root for. They are vibrant, boastful, robust fan bases, tons of interest in both those markets. And, you know, it's been grim. It's been so grim. Now, like Detroit, the NHL is also at its best when the Detroit Red Wings are a perennial playoff team. But the Detroit Red Wings have a plan. They've got one of the best GMs in hockey. They have this great new building. They have Moritz Seider. I don't pity the Red Wings the way that I pity fans of the Senators and the Sabres. I'd like to see those guys get something positive going.
Yeah, the Buffalo one in particular, not that I have any ill will towards Senators fans. They certainly deserve a break of good luck. But that Buffalo situation has just been so dire and so depressing for so long for the Sabres. And that is also, I will say, the Sabres, like if you were to map out, you know, because everyone always gets into the conspiracy theories and I don't subscribe to them at all. But if you were going to say if the NHL rigs the draft lottery, which they absolutely do not, who would be the winner tonight?
Philly.
Just because of the size of the market?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Buffalo would be up there, though, as well.
Philly or Seattle, for me.
Yeah, Seattle because of the new expansion club aspect. Philly, yeah,
And because it was just so hard, such a hard year for that franchise, and they could use a face. You know, they could use a face of the franchise. And if you have Wright Beniers, you know, even though those guys aren't necessarily, you know, that's not Patrick Kane. That's not...
No.
That's not Steven Stamkos. I mean, that would be a really nice starting point for the Kraken.
The other
but I have been in the room when the draft lottery balls have been picked. I've been in that room. I've done that shift. And I promise you 1,000% not rigged at all.
It's 100% not rigged. Look,
it would be impossible to do.
Connor McDavid is not going to Edmonton if the draft lottery is rigged. Full stop.
No.
It's not happening. Austin Matthews, look, I know it's the Leafs, but he's American. He's not going to a Canadian market if the draft lottery is rigged, right? It's just 100% not happening. I get it. It's fun. Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I don't
all
know.
That,
but I disagree with you on the Toronto one.
No, you don't think so? He's going to an American market. No way.
All right. Here's
no way.
Yeah. The Leafs are bigger than the NHL from a raw revenue perspective. And that team was aggressively rebuilding and Austin Matthews gave them a huge shot in the arm. I mean, that was the perfect storm for the NHL. So I disagree with you on that one. The McDavid one, I agree with you though.
Yeah.
Here's another one I'm curious to hear from both you and our listeners on. Which Canucks draft lottery loss from the rebuild hurts the most? So you have 2016 where the Canucks would have had the third overall pick, would have been Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Mm-hmm.
The club would have liked Pierre-Luc Dubois better than Jesse Puljujarvi in that spot. So that's just like where they were. They had the third best odds. So three, but I mean, obviously if you win, you get Matthews. That would be incredible, but
wouldn't be bad.
But I'm talking about the loss. So I'm going from their slot to where they ended up picking, right? Or we can even imagine a win. But you move to five, you get Olli Juolevi, compound a tough situation by also whiffing hard on the pick. The next year, you go from the third spot down to five. You end up with Elias Pettersson. I don't think you're too upset about that situation all told. The next year, you are in the sixth slot. You move to seven. You move down one. You get Quinn Hughes because Arizona and Detroit shot themselves in the foot. Thank you, John Chayka and Ken Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Get Quinn Hughes, franchise defenseman. Not too bad. 2019, you move from 9 to 10 for Vasily Podkolzin. You can look at it as
Trevor,
like,
Zegras goes at 9 in that one.
Trevor Zegras goes at 9. Which is the lottery you most would have wanted to win versus the player you got? Like, which do you think hurt the most?
I mean, there's no doubt it's 2016. Just because it's the Olli Juolevi year. And if we're talking about moving up, then, I mean, it's Austin Matthews at number one, which is the prize of prizes in these drafts that we're talking about. But even the jump from Juolevi to Pierre-Luc Dubois is enormous, an enormous jump, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the terms of the type of asset you're bringing home. And the other ones, you know, you could look at even the Elias Pettersson draft. If they don't fall back, they have a chance to take Cale Makar, right? Okay, hey, maybe you like Cale Makar more than Elias Pettersson. Hard not to at the point with what he's doing in the playoffs right now, but you still have Elias Pettersson. That's a really, really nice consolation prize. Even Vasily Podkolzin and Trevor Zegras, I mean, Podkolzin showed some incredible potential towards the end of his rookie season. So you're still, you still have not just something, but really nice pieces from all of those other drafts. The Olielevi one, I mean, you have Juho Lamico. That's what you have right now instead of a high-end star player at the top of your lineup. That one is just, I mean, that's before we even get into the fact that they passed over Matthew Tkachuk at that spot, right? So that has to be just, not even just from a lottery perspective, but just in general, looking at frustrating Canucks drafts, that 2016 one, certainly from recent vintages, has to be at the top of the list.
All right, I've got, here's my proposal to you.
All right.
I think the 2019 draft hurts the most. That was the draft I've witnessed live,
the 2019
by the way.
One?
Here's why. 2019. The draft lottery ends up being won by the Devils, who were third, that had the third best odds, but also the Rangers, who had the fifth best odds, and Chicago, who had the, who moved up. They moved up. They were the fourth worst odds to win the draft lottery, and they end up getting the third round pick, third overall pick. If you'd won that draft lottery, right, coming out of the, you know, a year on since the retirement of the Sedin twins, you're hosting the draft, and you get to pick Quinn's brother at the top of the draft. That, to me...
Not bad.
That, to me, is the storybook. You know, like, Austin Matthews obviously would be incredible to watch on these shores, but, you know, the idea of this team, but with Jack Hughes, based on what Jack Hughes has done this season, and the idea that you'd have, you know, a Hughes-Pettersson 1-2 punch down the middle with, like, Horvat as your third-line center for years to come, and a power play that, you know... had two brothers making magic the way that, you know, we've experienced for so long in this market for 20 years with Henrik and Daniel. I mean, that to me would have been magical. That would have been storybook. That would have been fantasy land. I just think the narrative heft of that, the feeling that you'd have immediately that all of a sudden this franchise's luck had materially changed and that this was like a chosen group, I think that heft would have come if you win in 2019.
I will say... on 2019, yes, obviously Jack Hughes is the prize, and he's showing it now in the NHL why he was the prize that year. But even if you just move up to the top three that year, Bowen Byram is on the board for you as well, right? As the born in BC, played his junior hockey in Vancouver, defenseman stud. And yeah, you already have a left-handed defenseman, but nothing wrong with having both Bowen Byram and Quinn Hughes on your blue line. So those are two very enticing, kind of sentimental picks. I hear where you're going.
That to me is it.
It's just, look, the gap between Vasily Podkolzin and Jack Hughes is massive, obviously, but it's not as big as the gap between Juho Lamico and Pierre-Luc Dubois.
But the thing is with the 2016 draft, yeah, you moved down. The second best player went sixth. The second best player in that draft class went after Vancouver picked. They still had the option to pick the second best player in that draft class. They just didn't. So I don't have a ton of sympathy for them. You know, like, I really don't. If you'd, in fact... I guess they have
no one to blame for but themselves.
You couldn't have lost the draft lottery anymore, but like that would have been a trade-down draft. You still have a chance to get McAvoy or Sergachev or Jake Bean. You know, like there were so many good players in that draft. It's just they didn't land one of them. That to me is why 2016 doesn't... Now, they still get a really good player in 2019. I love me some Vasily Podkolzin. Yep. But I think the Hughes brothers, Pettersson core with Demko and Net, like you're winning a cup with that group.
I think also...
You're winning a cup. You are. You just are.
You look at it, they went from 9th to 10th, so expectations were way for that 2019 one, right? Whereas in 2016, it's like, wow, we were really bad. We were really, really bad, and let's hope we get the reward. No, we got nothing. I think that does matter, just the emotional impact of it. It's like, oh, okay, 9th and 10th, not really a big difference. We can still get a good player, and they ended up getting a good player. These ones coming in, Chet and Burnaby says 2016 for sure. The look on Trevor Linden's face will haunt me forever.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that is a very good one. JFID says, 2016 in a land, or so 2016 by far. Brandon Vancouver says 2016 in a landslide as well. I do like this one though, who says, we're talking about passing on Matthew Tkachuk. This unsigned texter says, Tkachuk has done squat. Remember Calgary could be out in the first round. And he also says, the Canucks also have Noah Juulsen in addition to Juho Lamico. So, yes, good point. I forgot to mention that they also have Noah Juulsen as a result of that.
Tkachuk is one of the best two-way wingers in hockey.
Matthew Tkachuk just had a better season than JT Miller.
He's a fantastic player. But I do love, you're right, I forgot to mention Noah Juulsen in that trade,
also,
in that analysis.
Do you know how much this market would love Matthew Tkachuk? My goodness. Like, everyone in the NHL hates the guy. That's like the perfect player type for this market. He was like born and bred to play in this market. And he's not scared of the big quote. I remember. So on draft day, when you're covering the draft, there's players that move to pods where they are interviewed following their selection. And so I'm interviewing Olli Juolevi when Matthew Tkachuk comes in wearing a Flames jersey. And Juolevi wraps up his interview and, you know, Juolevi's not like the best quote. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do to write this story? Right. And I look over and Matthew Tkachuk's there and he's like sort of holding court. And I just throw my recorder on that table. And just as it winds down, I say, you know, any rivalry between you and your junior teammate, like, you know, Olli Juolevi, he went ahead of you. And he gave this answer that was like, you know, no, I'm looking forward to not pulling up when he goes back to retrieve pucks. You know, like I'm looking forward to smoking him going forward as a result. And it was just perfect. It like wrote my story for me. Matthew Tkachuk would have been heroic here. So I, you know what? I see it. But I, again, I just think the opportunity cost of that loss to me pales in comparison with if you'd won in 2019 and you had both Hughes brothers with Pettersson, that would have been chosen team territory.
We were mentioning also that there's no way for them to get into the mix realistically in the Connor Bedard draft next year. Rager says, I disagree. You trade Miller to a team that you're betting against and hope that pick becomes a lottery pick. That's the Canucks' path to Connor Bedard.
Let's go.
You're on the right path, Rager.
And no one tell me that that doesn't happen because we might see it tonight. If Chicago wins, Columbus is in the running to potentially mine Bedard out of a predatory trade, right? That is on the table tonight. Could be one of the biggest stories to come out of the draft lottery, which you can listen to live on Sportsnet 650 at 3:30 p.m. Pacific.
Quickly, we don't have a lot of time, but just quickly, maybe we'll expand on this in a later show. Who is the team you're targeting in that trade, right? Desperate enough and motivated to make the JT Miller trade and give up their 2023 first and also has a good chance or at least a chance of ending up in that lottery position.
Nashville, New York, Boston.
Boston's a spicy one.
Boston's
I like it.
My spicy take.
And somebody texted in, if Patrice Bergeron walks away, is JT Miller a fit with the Bruins?
Yes.
It's an interesting one. And if Bergeron walks away, that team... I really like the Bruins. They battled back to tie that series, but Bergeron he's everything for them there.
The fact remains that while it would be sweet for this city to land its favorite son, Connor Bedard, in a predatory trade with another team, it would be even sweeter if it was the Boston Bruins pick.
That would be pretty good. final word here says, unsigned, Vancouver can still draft Jack Hughes this year.
Washington.
Unrelated to the brothers, but still.
I want to add Washington.
Washington's
interesting.
There's
two types of teams you want to target for this. Team number one is team that's too dependent on their goaltender because goalie health, as we know, as we saw play out across the league this season, including with Nashville's sweep, you know, it's hazardous. If a team's too reliant on their goalie, that's the profile of a team you want to pick. Here's the other one, a team that seems to be at the end of their competitive window, but needs to go for it one more time. Because you're looking for a team that thinks they're a lot better than they are. Chicago is that latter example, a team that was at the end of their competitive window and was just trying desperately to jam it open one last time. Boston and the Washington Capitals, for me, are the teams that fit that mold for the summer.
We can continue to break that down in the weeks to come. But yes, the draft lottery, only a couple hours away. You can hear it live here, 3:30 on Sportsnet 650. The People Show is up next with Bick Nizar and Randy Janda on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.